King of the Worshipers! Where's all of my praises? I want everybody around the world to put your hands together because all the praise belongs to God. Here we go.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi everyone, I'm Gary Null. Today we're going to learn about how exercise improves anxiety and mood if you're over the age of 40, and especially all the people undergoing chemotherapy. University of Rochester Medical Center on that one. And about 15 other really important stories, cutting edge, all from quality institutions. Also today, I'm going to go through some of the recent headlines that the average person is not aware of. And I'm going to ask you for your feedback. I'm going to ask you in our talkback segment, what is your opinion? I'll save mine. I'd rather hear yours. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. Also, America is deep in debt. Just yesterday, I was writing a commentary, which I'll give in the next week, about what lessons have we learned or not from the 2007-08 Great Recession. I found not only have we not learned a single thing, either the government, its agencies, corporate America, including Wall Street, or the average citizen. We're back to where we were, but on steroids. What does it take to get us to stop and think about the consequences of what we're doing? So I'm going to share a bit of a documentary, The Overspin American, Why We Want What We Do Not Need. We'll play about 10 minutes of that. So we have a lot to share today, and of course we always begin with the latest on health and healing. Now, although we know that exercise improves mood, we've shown that. In fact, I did a clinical study about 3 years ago with over 500 people who, to get into the study, they had to show that they were clinically depressed or suffering from clinical anxiety and were under medical supervision. Within 3 months, we were able to reverse 93% of that. Their doctors took them off their medications, and they were happy. And I've been able to do a 6 month and a year follow-up, and most of them maintained that. So we know that the more you exercise, the more the feel-good hormones you release, the endorphins, and that just gives us a sense of joy. This was published in the Journal of the American Geriatric Society. But what if you're sick? What if you're undergoing chemotherapy? So what they did at the University of Rochester Medical Center, they took a look at people who were undergoing chemotherapy and then saw what the benefits of exercise was, and it was substantial. Needless to say, a lot of people who have cancer also have anxiety because they're afraid of the outcome, especially if death is the outcome. So if you know someone who has cancer, by all means, get them exercising. From Joens Guttenberg University in Germany, red sage is lethal to drug-resistant cancer. This is important. According to the studies, we know that the Chinese sage, I'll spell it for you, S-A-L-V-I-A, salvia, is a sage that has incredible medicinal benefits. This was also done at the Institute for Biotechnology and Drug Research in Germany. And they discovered that the root extract of red sage is toxic to drug-resistant cancer cells, but does not harm normal cells. So, one more piece of the puzzle if you have cancer. This is from the American Journal of Chinese Medicine. Also, from Marseille University in France, tomatoes could bring new hope in the fight against diabetes. A compound in tomatoes can offer a new way to fight diabetes. The researchers found that lycopene, L-Y-C-O-P-E-N-E, the substance which, by the way, gives tomatoes and cherries and watermelon and raspberries and strawberries their red color, combats the inflammatory process that causes the condition. So we need more tomatoes in the diet. Moods are contagious, University of Chicago. Similar to a cold or flu virus being contagious, so are moods. However, most people are not familiar with the fact that we can become infected with the moods of emotions of those around us, especially those who are negative. Now, anyone who's ever listened to one of the Pacifica local station board meetings or their national board meeting knows that it's one of the most toxic environments you could find anywhere. Though they may be well-intentioned and wanting to do good, it's like a Robespierrean court in 1793. The end result is never pleasant, and nothing ever changes for the better. That's why Pacifica is virtually bankrupt. In fact, it is bankrupt outside of its asset, its licenses. And that's because of mood. It's so rare to find anyone who has a good mood, unless they're successful at something, unless they're doing something that honors them, unless people are doing something that they want to do, then they're in a good mood. Now, a lot of people are in good moods. It's just that they're not aware of how vulnerable they are to being around people who are not. Because people who are not in a good mood are really rageful against people who are. Well, just imagine, it's a polarity. Let's just say that you're watching people reverse their disease. You're watching people improve in their health. You're seeing people who were near death's door, who now are vital, who no longer have fear but wake up with a smile, another day to live, to honor life. What do you think about that? If you're an angry, bitter, self-absorbed person, passive-aggressive, you won't say anything negative to a person's face, but boy, will you cut them behind their back. These are lowlifes. These are the dreck of society. We've all met them. Many of them probably have been in our own lives, either as friends or family members, maybe in the workplace. But these are the people who are the emotional toxic time bombs. No matter what is done, they'll find a way to deny it. No matter why you're happy, they'll find a way to be cynical about it. Because they have nothing to live for except to feel that today I am angry, and because I'm angry, I must be justified in my anger, and let's see who I can blame for it. And when you see some of these movements out there, the movements are just filled with contempt towards those who are succeeding at something, contempt toward those who are doing something right. And what does it mean when you do so many things, you do it wrong? Are you angry if the person does it right? If you try to dance and you can't, do you never want to watch a Fred Astaire film? So please understand, negative, toxic people will absolutely impact your emotions. This is in the University of Chicago. So why not surround yourselves with people who are positive, optimistic? Let that be an emotional contagion that strengthens our sense of what is possible. I spent 2.5 hours one time with a person with a terminal illness. And the person says, I don't see how I'm going to benefit from anything you've given me. I was told by my daughter that you'd helped a lot of people. I said, I have. I've helped millions of people, tens of millions of people. After all, I've been around longer than any other person in American history helping people with health. Longest radio, non-commercial radio show in American history, the longest health program. And between the books and the broadcasts on PBS and syndication, ABC, a lot of people have learned. What they've done with the information is not up to me, it's up to them. But I presented it. All I can do is present information. What a person does with it's up to them. I don't take responsibility for that. And the person says, but you've given me nothing. And I said, okay, you've been here 2.5 hours. What have I shared with you in 2.5 hours? You didn't tell me what vitamins to take. I said, it has nothing to do with vitamins. A person at the stage you're at is not going to have your disease reversed by vitamins. You've talked about everything that's wrong in your life, how you've been a victim your whole life. Everything is about you and how you feel, how you've never had a good relationship, how your parents were neglectful, and how your employers didn't appreciate you, and how miserable everything is, how negative everything is, and you're at the epicenter of it. So what have I shared with you? I've shared how to go into the dark side, how to look at the impact of what you've participated in by living your life in reverse. Go to every single, from here go back, and look at every single event that's happened where you have felt like a victim. Then ask yourself, what role did you play in it? You refuse to accept any responsibility for what a miserable life you've lived. And yet you're 60 years old. That's given you a lot of opportunity to be responsible along the way. Are you saying that you're like a leaf in the wind, that you're not responsible where the wind blows you? You're helpless. Well, how are you supposed to reverse a terminal disease if you feel helpless? You've given the power to the disease. You've given power to fear. You've given power to insecurity. You've given power to incompleteness of life, the unrequited sense of love and empathy that are necessary to connect with other people. Also, I ask you, what have you done to make the world a better place except complain about everyone else who's making it a better place? Now, and then this person stopped and says, what does that have to do with my cancer? I said, it has everything to do. Because if I want to live, I'm going to show that I deserve to live. I'm going to show myself that I've been given a gift of life. Why should you be held accountable for anything in your life when you've done such a good job of screwing it up? Blame someone on it. That's a good idea. That's what this station does. Blame someone. That's it. Blame. Because that's all the hell we know how to do today is blame. Except for about 3% of the population who don't have time nor desire to engage in that negativity. So they're walking around with a good attitude and getting stuff done in their own light and they're happy. What gives you the right to be happy? Well, because I'm not you, friend. I respect my life and I look for the best that I can be. Well, that angers us. Well, too bad. So that's what the University of Chicago is telling us. Moods are contagious, good moods and bad moods. Why do you think at our retreats we have so much laughter? Ask anybody who's been there. All day long I'm making fun of everything and everyone, showing the absurdity of life, and people are laughing their butts off. And then that gets them a good mood, being around nature. Gets them in a better mood. Be in silence so nature can talk to you without your chattering little brain. That's really good. Now open up and be vulnerable and let that energy out and watch what manifests when that energy comes out. Oh, wow. What's this about? This isn't linear. This isn't mathematical. Explain how this happens. No. You don't have to explain life. Life wasn't meant to be figured out. It was meant to be enjoyed and lived with honor. Just a lesson, University of Chicago. Could saffron be as effective as a stimulant medicine in treating ADHD? This is University of Medical Science in Iran. It says, yes. Yeah. For a long time, and by the way, saffron has always been worth more than gold is today as well. Curcumin has been in the spotlight, I guess, for the last 10 years. There are thousands of studies on its healing benefits, and it works. But then, according to the Journal of Child and Adolescent Psychopharmacology, they took a look at saffron, and specifically its impact upon ADHD, and this was a randomized controlled study. They gave 30 milligrams of saffron per day over the course of 6 weeks. Another group took Ritalin, which is currently a standard treatment for mental illness and given almost all kids who have any form of attention deficit disorder. And the researchers found that saffron worked not just as well as Ritalin in addressing ADHD symptoms, but there was 30% of the parents found that no longer were any of the stimulants required. Now, Ritalin has a lot of negative side effects. Saffron has none. Also, saffron has a lot to do about helping your immune system. It's really terrific for you. So saffron is safe, and it is effective. And this was a quality study. So consider that if you have a child with ADHD. From Brigham Women's Hospital, medication linked to increased risk of inflammation of the bowel. This is in the Elementary Pharmacology and Therapeutics. They studied 17,000 individuals with autoimmune disease who were treated with anti-inflammatory medications and found that there was a tremendous amount of adverse effects. So why not do something like probiotics, aloe vera, cat's claw, bee propolis, the things we know actually heal all of these different bowel disorders, high-quality fiber. You know, back in the 17th century, if you look at the diet, and when I travel around the world, especially in Europe, I always like to go to the medieval residences that are either museums or still operational, and I'm always curious about the diet, so I've read a lot on the subject. And you ask, why is it that the nobility were frequently sicker than the peasants? And then you have to get into the structure of what they were eating. Let's just say that this is an average, and this is true, this is an average peasant's diet as compared to a noble person, like a duke, an earl. You get up in the morning, and you're going to be very physical all day. These people had to do a lot of physical labor. They didn't have tractors. They didn't have any of the conveniences. Everything was by the sweat of their brow. So they would have ale and a very coarse bread. Now, they had only stone grinding of the grains, and nothing could really be stored because of rodents, vermin. So they would make a large loaf of bread, and these were very heavy. And they were heavy because they had the endosperm and the high-quality roughage fibers and the amino acids, so they were getting good quality protein, complex carbohydrates, and essential fatty acids. And they would eat a substantial portion of that piece of bread, and then they were good for the morning. When they come in the afternoon, they would have porridge in a pot. Now, these were not always big kettles that you see, and forget the idea that, you know, they were stacking wood in there. They rarely use wood because wood doesn't burn hot and it burns out very quickly. They would use coals, which can go all day and are much hotter. And so they would have generally something easy to get, like peas. They might have tubers as well. But then that would be stewed. But then they would have salmon. And you think, well, where did they get salmon? Well, we forget that salmon is also a freshwater river of fish. And back then, it was plentiful. I mean, it was the primary fish people ate. And they would take their salmon, and they would take the bread, and they would grill the salmon, put it on that big piece of bread, and they would then pour the porridge of peas over that, and they would use something like rosemary or some other herb as a seasoning. And the way they would make their seasonings, they would put the fresh herbs onto a cloth, and then they would take a mortar and pestle, and they put the herbs. They might have some garlic, they might have some onions, some wild onions, shallots, and they might have some salt, and they would grind this in a little mortar. And then they would put that onto the cloth, and they would turn the cloth upside down so the bulk was in the bottom, and they would squeeze it, and then the juice, which would be the sauce, would trickle out all over the salmon. Now, that's what the peasant ate. So high-quality protein, essential fatty acids, the good omega-3 fatty acids, and lots of fiber. In the evening, they came in just about sunset, and they had a cold dish. They generally would have a piece of cheese from a goat they might have had, or sheep, they would make cheese. They're their probiotics, good for their intestine. And they would have that on a piece of bread. Well, if you stop and add up how many grams of high-quality fiber they were getting from that bread throughout the day, and they could afford it, it was not expensive, it was around 40 to 50 grams of fiber. So they did not have the excess purines, and they were much healthier. And they had ale. By the way, it's not they didn't drink water. If they had wells, they drank the water. If they didn't have wells, and most people did, then they would drink ale. Ale was, depending upon the barley and the hops and the yeast, almost everybody had ale. It was very, very inexpensive and very common. So the diet was not a bad diet, and depending upon the season, when season they would have wild berries, they would go and pick, and they weren't the same size. I was picking wild raspberries and wild strawberries in Sweden. Sweden has a very short summer, and these are tiny little things. And first, when you look at them, think, well, that's immature. Then you look again, you see it's beet red, so it's not. And sweet as can be, because the shorter the season, nature adjusts to that, and that's what it does. So you get much sweeter growing smaller. So they would have berries and tubers, nuts. So they actually had a fairly wide variety of items. Now, as you went up the scale in economics, and if you were a landowner, by the way, a lot of people owned their own property, small lot, and they would frequently share in common. One person would maybe have a pig, because pigs were inexpensive, but they wouldn't kill the chicken, because the chicken gave eggs. They might kill the rooster, but not the chicken. And unless you were, let's say, a duke or an earl. And they insisted upon having meat frequently three times a day. And pork, grilled pork, would be in the morning. And then they would have venison, which is deer, and chicken, because they could afford chickens. And they didn't want whole grain bread. They felt that the darker the bread, the more it was peasant food. So they wanted theirs refined. So hence the concept of where the peasants were eating wild honey, when they could afford it, they would eat sugar when it was available. And as a result, they had white carbohydrates, refined carbohydrates, and lots of animal proteins. Oh, they did something different, where the peasants would come in and they would have a wash bucket, and they would wash their hands and dry them. If you were a member of royalty, not even royalty, if you were a member of the aristocracy or the bourgeois class, you would have a male servant pour a bowl of water over your hands, which you'd rub together, and then he would hand you a piece of linen, and then you would wipe your hands. And so they ended up with gout and heart disease. They weren't doing physical work. So you see, we have to rethink. Except for plagues, and where people were starving because of severe drought, what it was like to actually be a peasant and how many things a peasant were doing that those living through other people's efforts were not. Also, so just remember, you can change a lot about your bowel if you just had a glass twice a day of raw cabbage juice. Very healing, with aloe vera in it, 1 ounce of aloe vera. But then you have the medications increase the risk of inflammatory bowel disease. And also from China Medical University in Taiwan, sulforaphane, once again, sulforaphane, they're your sulfurs. And that's why when you take an alpha-lipoic acid or cysteine, and you're going to have that smell and taste. That's sulforaphane, but it's found to trigger premature human colon cancer cells' death, causes cancer cells to commit suicide. And finally, from Hong Kong Baptist University, astragalus relieves inflammation and protects against gastrointestinal cancer. So that's the latest on health and healing. And we're going to take a quick break and come back, and we're going to take a couple of the questions that people have called in and raised. And then here are the issues that I'd like for you to address. I'd like to hear your opinion. One, why do you believe that the average American, no matter what their background, no matter what their level of education, refuses to make individual changes and protest for major governmental changes concerning our environmental degradation? That's a big one. Number two, why is it that in all these presidential candidates, we've only seen one, and you know which one actually had the courage to say that what is going on in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is wrong? And why are you all standing up for Israel and no one's standing up for Palestine? And how many of you have been to the West Bank, have been to Gaza, have spent time not talking to Hamas, but rather talking to the average citizen to find out what it's like living under this modern apartheid? And if they're not talking about it, does that mean that the American media doesn't care about it because they haven't asked a question? All right. Those are two questions I'd like for you to address. You can call in with your thoughts, please, at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And by the way, because I cannot, there's simply way too many people calling my office wanting me to counsel them on minor issues. I do counsel people every day, 7 days a week, even when I'm on the road, at the end of the day, sometimes 11 o'clock midnight, is the only time I have when I put down the camera and start, you know, looking at the next day. I'll call people, try to help them who have terminal diseases, but you must be terminal for me to see you. But what I've done is I've hired someone, paying them a very nice wage, for them to be able to counsel you for free. I remember Pat Duncanson and several others that I've hired in the past who counseled people and got a lot of people healthy on lifestyle. So I've done this again. This person sees people on Tuesdays and Thursdays all day. They work a whole day to help you. Give a call to this number if you'd like to make a reservation. And if you don't get someone, just leave a message. 646-926-5459. 646-926-5459. That's actually the number for Travis, but he's taking messages for the person. Okay? That way we'll get a lot of people help. We estimate that we've counseled more than 10,000 people for free to help them, and we've gotten some very positive feedback. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Greetings to you, Mr. Null, and thank you for all that you do. I have a question about washing grains such as brown rice and steel-cut oats. I'd like to know, am I supposed to wash these grains before I cook them, or is that something that actually washes away some of the nutritional value of the grains? Thanks very much, and have a great day.
Okay, it's a good question. You should wash everything, including nuts, before you eat them, and whole grains in particular, because remember, whole grains that are grown organically do not have insecticides. So it is inevitable that when they're culling out or milling the grains, at least to get them to where they can be bagged in bulk, you're going to have insects. You're going to have all kinds of little critters. You're going to have mealybugs born in them based upon the heat. And a lot of people say, oh, my God, they're little flying insects in here. Throw it away. No, don't throw it away. All you have to do is rinse them. And if you rinse and agitate the water, they'll float to the top and you just drain them off. So, yes, you must wash everything. There'll be molds, not lethal molds, but there'll be some molds. There'll be everything that was in the air is going to be on those grains. And so just wash them. It's perfectly acceptable. You do not wash away any of the nutrients. All right. We'll take another call.
Hi, this is Karen from New York. This question is for Gary Null. Gary, what are your thoughts about cryonics for the purpose of possible immortality in the future? Is this something that should be considered seriously? Thank you very much for your answer and all that you do. Bye.
Okay, this is a small, almost hidden movement in the United States. It's reserved for the very wealthy. At the point of death, they take off the head and preserve it in very cold chamber. I think it's 60 below zero, somewhere in that vicinity. And then this is maintained until such time that there's a cure for the disease the person was suffering from. Or they could keep the whole body. And if you're rich enough to believe that there's a time when that life force can come back, but we have not seen any evidence that this can be rejuvenated. Unlike some beans that have been found and grains that have been found in vases, 2,000 years they've been in vase in Egypt and water was added to them and they sprouted. The human body, is a life cycle. And we know at death that an energy is removed. Where it goes and what happens to that is a matter of open discussion. There's no hard truths about it. It's whatever person chooses to believe. But we do know that that energy dissipates. So if that's the case, then what kept the body alive and gave it its energy that entire time of its life cycle is gone from the physical matter. Now, if like some other form of woolly mammoth, if you wanted to take some DNA that was not yet damaged and preserve that DNA to see if the science of stem cell rejuvenation is able to regrow a person, since immature stem cells can grow into anything, a heart, a brain, that's plausible. That's a hypothesis that with the rate of science advancing in stem cell could not be ruled out. But that would mean that there would have to be a whole new standard of what you would be preserving in the currently alive person that you'd want to rejuvenate. How far that is in the future, I cannot give you that answer. But I do know that transhumanism is already here. It just hasn't been introduced yet, but it will be. They're doing very good at manipulating people and believing that 5G is great and safe and that you should have everything in your house hooked up to a common artificial intelligence, and they're bragging about in Silicon Valley, creating machines that are smarter than humans. Not the brightest thing in the world to do, but that is the next step, and I believe it'll be here within the next 5 years. We'll say hello to Mike in New Jersey. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. Your thoughts, please.
Hey, Gary. Good afternoon. So I was going to comment on your question about why people don't seem to care or want to do anything about what's happening with the Earth and the climate. And there's a couple of things that I think. And one is, unless you see it really impact you directly in your own backyard, you're not going to get involved. And even then when it does, and I've seen this because I live in New Jersey and we've had many of a natural disaster here, people get through the crisis and then they move back to the TV and the couch. So I think, you know, one of the things that I've tried to do out here is to sort of look at it and break it down into smaller, I guess, segments, because it's so overwhelming for most people to think about what's happening to the Earth. They just can't grasp it. So, for example, we've taken out where I live, we had a bunch of tennis courts that no one was using. And we bulldozed them over and put community gardens in. And I think people related to the smaller step of how this impacts the earth as opposed to this big, giant, you know, problem. It's overwhelming. So those are my thoughts.
I appreciate those thoughts. Thank you. By the way, I'm just now finishing. In fact, this week I'll be finishing up the voiceovers. This is the most comprehensive, complex documentary I've ever done out of over 100 documentaries. But it's also the most complete of allowing us to understand what's really going on with the environment, not just global warming, but the environment. And what happens when we don't pay attention, when societies don't pay attention, let alone individuals. And once you watch this, and I have a sneak preview coming of it in 2 weeks, but once you watch this, then you'll better understand what you and you alone or you with small groups of people can do. I'm very optimistic about individuals making a big difference. I am not optimistic about society as a whole, especially the self-absorbed, narcissistic professional class or their brat children or the corrupt government officials. Those agencies have been captured and not going to be surrendered to practical solutions. But individuals, yes, we can make a difference. Thanks for your call. Take one more call from Ronald from Long Island. Hi, Ronald. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Gary. Two comments regarding the candidate, the one honest candidate who expressed feelings regarding Israeli policy. That sounds to me like Tulsi Gabbard.
You are correct. You are correct. In fact, on my next program, I'm going to be showing a hearing, and guess what? There was no one in Congress. I mean, not a single soul, just her grilling the big general who's brought forward to pound the drums for war. And for 13 minutes, she nailed him on his warmongering. So good for you. Glad that you're up on that. That's all the time we have for our talkbacks and for our questions. You can call in and leave a thought if you don't get in on the air. Let me give you our voicemail line. And please feel free on anything you feel needs to be said, say it. 862-800-6805. 862-800-6805. As you're probably aware, I believe in humanistic spiritual values that honor freedom of speech. Even if I don't like what someone is saying, I still believe they should have a right to say it. I have the right to disagree with them. I have a right to debate them. I have the right to walk away from any project or point of view that I feel is deleterious to the human condition. But right now we have massive censorship. We have something as bad going on now with political correctness and identity politics as we had during McCarthyism. And I'm ashamed of what has happened to the corporate liberal community. For those who are traditional, lifelong liberals who believe in freedoms and honoring life and all of its ethnicities and all of its different groups, boy, that has been substantially neutered by those in power. That's unfortunate. I promised the other day when I did an actual historical background on Ms. Harris that I would do the same today for another person. And I've chosen today to give you some background information on some of the candidates, and this is Joe Biden is one of those candidates. First, he has a 40-year career in Congress. I don't believe anyone should be allowed to stay in Congress more than one term. One term, that's it. I believe they should be paid the average American wage, not a penny more, with no benefits outside of what an average. If you're going to work for the average American, then show that you are in unison with them. He's been a Democratic centrist tied to private interest. If members of Congress had to wear patches like NASDAQ drivers on who sponsors their race, every square inch of his body would be covered with a patch, including his face. He only has a 60% approval rating from the ACLU. That's about norm for most of the centrist Democrats. But here's where he is, should be challenged. He voted for the Iraq War, and he was a champion of it. By the way, he was not just a member of Congress. He was chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee at the time. As chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in 2002, he stated unequivocally that Saddam Hussein had a sizable arsenal of chemical weapons as well as biological weapons, including anthrax, and that he believed they had a strain of smallpox, despite UN reporting that Iraq had no weapons of mass destruction, including weaponized chemical or biological agents. Now, mind you, as the head, the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, he would have been receiving information from the national security agencies on a daily basis. He voted for the Patriot Act, but he opposed the act's wiretapping section. But when it came to finding that it was being violated, he did not speak up, nor did any member of Congress on any committee. Now, think of that for a moment. Here we have committees like the Senate Intelligence Committee or the House Intelligence Committees, where you have a large number of representatives sitting and listening, getting briefs on everything that the American public is told is confidential and top secret. Not once in 40 years did any of these people come forward and say, there's a lot of corruption going on inside of our intelligence agencies. They're unseating governments. They're engaged in regime change. They're putting out massive propaganda through the news media. They've captured most of the news media that's supposed to be standing aside and apart from control by the government. Not once. So then what good are these committees? There were two people who told us that there was something wrong going on, but they couldn't tell us what it was. Why? Because they were restricted. Restricted by what? You're there, you give an oath to uphold the Constitution. The Constitution doesn't have a provision that says uphold the Constitution unless you feel threatened by a local law from one of the government agencies, then always go by the law of the agency, not the truth of the Constitution. That's why I hold all these legislators in such contempt. Also, Biden voted, he has a very poor record as a diplomat while vice president, and he's always aligned with military regimes. He was against Libya. He was against Syria. But he was for the terrorists that we were funding, and he knew that. He said NATO had got it right in Libya. Okay, take a look at Libya today. There was just a bombing over the weekend, and dozens of children and women were killed. Estimated upwards of 50,000 innocent Libyans have been killed. The number one nation in a number one country in Africa, 54 countries, was destroyed. There was no crime in Libya. Women had the most freedoms of any Islamic country in the world. They were prosperous. They had no debt. Every time a barrel of oil sold, it was divided amongst the people of Libya. So everybody's bank account got better. Colonel Gaddafi was not even in power. He had given over his power 4 years before that. Where are our journalists? Where are our scholars? Where are the people who are supposed to be the best and brightest and give us the facts before we make a decision? No, Libya was the Paris of Africa. It was the envy of Africa. Free education, free medical care, bonuses when you got married, giving you a farm and equipment and seeds, the largest human-made irrigation system in the world. So now look at what we have. Have you seen Hillary cackling and bragging about it? We came, we saw, he died? How does a person who's the head of an entire contingent of mindless Democrats all think that's a good thing? We took an innocent person and all of his people, and we destroyed an entire country because of her geopolitical and financial interest, and those of Barack Obama. Why hasn't the media held them accountable? Why hasn't the left held them accountable? Those who are truly liberal have, but they have no voice. If you've noticed, who you don't see ever in the media are true liberals. And that's unfortunate. They've been excluded. But that was Joe Biden. Also, he was hard-headed neocon concerning Iran. Remember, he was chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He knew then in 1953, started under Truman, then went to Eisenhower, that the CIA worked with British intelligence on behalf of British Petroleum to destroy Mossadegh, the democratically elected and moderate and progressive who wanted to work with other countries, but they didn't want their natural resources like oil to be exploited to the detriment of their people. Also, we had installed the Shah of Iran, and he was an absolute homicidal maniac. We supported him, as did Israel. And never a mention to the history of this country, only that they represented some acts of evil. He also has called for sanctions against Iran, and he sides with Trump and Bolton and Pompeo on support for the fascist who wants to topple Maduro in Venezuela. He's a self-described Zionist. He said on Jewish TV program, "I am a Zionist. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist." Well, you're right, you don't. In fact, an awful lot of Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox Jews cannot stand this political Zionist because Zionism is not a religion. You know, he was a mouthpiece for AIPAC and the Jewish lobby. He supports a two-state solution, but nothing. He's wishy-washy on Russia. He aligned with Hillary and doesn't want anything cooperating on domestic issues. It's equally as bad. Corporate and banking executives are close friends and campaign funders, and they know that a Biden administration is no different than a Hillary administration, Barack administration, George Bush, or Bill Clinton administration. Anything Wall Street wants, Wall Street will get. He is the ultimate corporate wonk, and he will not support any legislation to jail corporate executives on criminal charges. And remember, Lehman Brothers was over 100 years old, and it was run by a man who didn't spend a lot of time there and didn't like being challenged. And the stock went nosediving, and the Fed at the last moment on a Sunday, starting, I think it was 6 o'clock at night, but went all night. They wanted to see what they could do to keep it from going under because hundreds of billions of dollars were at risk of being lost. And I think it was, what's his name, Fold? In any case, they allowed it to go bankrupt. Bear Stearns, they stopped it from going bankrupt. It dropped from about $126 a share to $2 a share, and then it was given to one of the friends at J.P. Morgan Chase, Diamond. So these people never were held accountable, and yet they created the crash. Why? They allowed mortgages to be sold, knowing that people could not repay them if there was any fluctuation in their income, liar loans. So all these mortgages around the United States were packaged and sent to Wall Street. Wall Street then bundled them and sold them as investments, these tranches, all over the world. So no one actually knew who owned a mortgage. And as a result, when Wall Street crashed and the price of real estate dropped, people were underwater. Now, a lot of those people could have challenged it in court because the people who were evicting them, the local mortgage companies, didn't actually have title to their home. All that had been shifted over to these investors who were all getting a piece of the action. And some who did fight actually won. I never believe that people should just walk away when they've been told, you know, you're being foreclosed on. Take it to court. More often than not, you'll win if you can show that they don't have the actual title. In any case, about 21 million Americans lost their home, 7 million homeowners. At no time did Barack Obama offer the American public a remedy by putting an executive order to put a moratorium on home foreclosures. Not one. He didn't save a single home. How can you go out to people who you say you're working on their behalf, vote for me, I believe in change? Well, you shortchanged us. And yet people won't look at what a person does to evaluate their character. They look at their style. Don't be caught up in Joe Biden's style, whatever you want to call it. He's a willing foot soldier for the campaign to emasculate laws allowing debtors relief from loans. He wants to see you pay high interest rates and go to jail or debtors' prisons if you can't. From the outset of his career on Capitol Hill, he reached out to right-wing segregationist senators from the South, including Jesse Helms and Strom Thurmond, to advance his legislative agenda against busing. Now, you can make legitimate arguments against busing, but he aligned himself with the people who were segregationists. He was instrumental in pushing for the 1994 crime bill that led to a spike in incarceration, mainly of African Americans. And he was still supporting that decision in 2016. He described African-American felons as predators, too, and sociopathic to rehabilitate. Well, why didn't he go over to Norway and see that they actually allow their prisoners to have the keys to their own jails, and they have the opportunity to go out and to work in the community and come back at the end of the day, because they have to take classes in rehabilitating, because they got the idea that everyone in jail is going to be let out someday, so why not work with them in letting them out, where they actually can adjust to going back inside. They had probably the best system in the world for rehabilitating prisoners. There's no punishment. There's no iron bars. There's no solitary confinement. My God, that goes back to the Inquisition. Yet, that's not what Joe Biden wants. Joe wants you to suffer because he supports every kind of draconian, and he's extremely, extremely biased against African Americans, because those he considered, if you're a felon, you're a predator, and you're sociopathic, and you can't be rehabilitated. As a senator from Delaware, deeply tied to the consumer credit side of the banking industry, why he is called at one time the senator from MBNA, before it was bought by the Bank of America. As far back as the 1970s, he's helped negotiate a deal rolling back bankruptcy protections for graduates with federal student loans. And in 1984, he worked to do the same for borrowers with loans for vocational schools. So if you took out a loan and you were broke, he wanted to make sure that you couldn't file bankruptcy. He was the chief sponsor of the 1990 Crime Control Act to further limit debtors' ability to take advantage of bankruptcy protection. He would not advocate breaking for up huge financial institutions. Obama didn't want institutions broken up either. He was a strong promoter of all the free trade agreements during the Clinton years, like NAFTA. He supported the Trans-Pacific Partnership, closed-door negotiations during the Barack Obama years. And he was part of the problem for why the national security state spies on Americans. He even favored Obama's National Defense Authorization Act. Now he opposes Medicare for All. He favors Obamacare, completely corrupt system. There's still 50 million uninsured Americans, not 27 million, as we've been told. But last month switched his view to support a public health insurance option. On climate change, he's aligned more with Al Gore, favoring carbon emissions, which caps, which are completely a part of the neoliberal free market capitalist system. He has not backed the Green New Deal resolution or taken a no fossil fuel money pledge, a vow to reject contributions over $200 from PACs and lobbyists and executives from fossil fuel companies. He favors nuclear power as an energy option. He supports capital punishment, and his 1994 Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act was created. He supported the Hyde Amendment, that poor women who rely on Medicaid must pay for abortion services out of their own pocket. And during Clarence Thomas's confirmation hearings, he refused to allow other women to testify about their experiences, similar to Anita Hill's regarding his sexual harassment. He voted for increasing prison sentences, building up local law enforcement into a police state, and then privatizing the prison system. He supports a war on drugs, and he passed a bill that has been used by the Department of DEA to harass youths and parties. And he supported the DARK Act, preventing GMO labeling. So what could possibly go wrong if he's elected president? But it's your choice. I just wanted to share with you what you may not know about him. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you for listening, and have a nice day.